I am sitting in Mobile Podcast Command with a fresh cup of coffee in Wisconsin, of all places. Last time I did a podcast, I was in California on the eastern side of the Sierras in the desert. Lots has happened since then. We'll talk about some of it. So really, we're going to focus on the last few days. Mount Rainier to Wisconsin, less than a week of travel in podcast 1002, the Bob Davis podcast. And it has been something else. Now, I'm going to talk about this a lot in the coming podcasts. One of the things you know that I've been dealing with is connectivity issues. So this isn't really a commercial. This is a part, an experience I'm going to tell you in about 20 or 30 seconds because I don't want to take up too much time with this. But I have a friend who has a business. I will be telling you the name of the business and how to contact him. If you are getting ready to retire and you're going to go out on the road, if you're going on the road for business, if you're doing anything mobile and you require communications, and we all do. I saw an Instagram post from some company that's built a van for gaming. You can game anywhere. Well, you can game anywhere as long as you have a decent connection. So the number one thing that people all buy to maintain their connection is something called a WeBoost. There's various levels of it, and supposedly it boosts your signal so you can get data and make calls. But the WeBoost is designed, I have learned, primarily to make it possible for you to text and to make calls. Data, it actually slows down. So if you have a WeBoost, I'm just going to tell you that you're going to want to listen to these podcasts because I'm going to be telling you about a connectivity capability that's going to blow your mind. I'm in Wisconsin where most of the time I have no AT&T signal. This system that I have now in this truck automatically shifts back and forth between Verizon and AT&T. It also is capable of accessing Wi-Fi with some minor programming, or I should say toggles on the software. And so right now I'm hooked up to the mesh network here at the lake, so I'm not on any cell signals. I have never been able to send data up at the lake with anything, because even with WeBoost, there's not enough bandwidth with AT&T, where I am in Wisconsin, to be able to send data. This thing is amazing, and I'm going to tell you how to get it in the coming podcasts. All right, I have to thank some people that I did not thank because I did not have access to my PayPal information because I didn't have a signal. So now I have signals. The other thing I'm very quickly going to say, now, I don't have to open up my hotspot on the phone. I don't have any of that nonsense. It is up and running. So when I open the computer, it automatically goes to Wi-Fi. Bam, it is online. And bam, I'm sending up data. So I would have access to all this information if I'd had this device in the truck, which is awesome. But I did get online and grab some names from people who have made donations, and I want to thank all of them. Dave Forbes, $150. Dave and I have done business before, but he's been donating, and you know we haven't done any. Dave, I really appreciate. Dave's my Delta pilot and business development guy, and he's great. Lynn Rhyme, $500. Can't believe it. Thank you so much. Sean Sarazen, $100. Don Anger, $10. Matt Myerskoff, or Todd, my friend Todd, $25. Shane Parr, always great to hear from Shane, $25. Shane's got a podcast with his wife, which I told him I wouldn't mention, but I am going to mention. I think it's called the Odd Couple Podcast or something. I'll get it right at some point, Shane. Sandra Amiot, $25. Thank you. Nicole Heil, for a while back, donated $100. Nicole and I worked together in St. Louis with a fine bunch of people, including my friend Kelly and a bunch of other people. And it's just great to have her still with me. And William Johnson, $100. Thank you for donating to the Bob Davis podcast. You can do it by finding the PayPal window. It's a little oval right underneath the picture of Mobile Podcast Command. That stuff goes right into the tank immediately. So, because I'm just using PayPal to get fuel. So you guys are keeping this thing on the road. Thank you so much. You think that it takes less time to get from point A to point B, especially when you're out west, and time gets confusing. And then when you have to get on it, you got to go 400 or 500 miles or more in a couple of days or a day. And then the next day, you got to go another 500. So I don't even know what the total mileage is from Mount Rainier to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, but it's got to be a couple of thousand miles, if not more than that. I've said, too, that I don't like to travel more than a couple hundred miles a day. And I was in a really great groove where I was out west, and I'm going to talk about some of this stuff. And I would spend a couple days somewhere or more. And it was really nice. It was a nice, smooth, relaxing way to travel. And then when you shift into appointment mode, then it becomes a little bit more intense. And I struggle with that. But and the reason I struggle with it, I like to meander. I don't want to have things that I have to do. But if you're in business and you're on the road, there are things that you have to do. And moving quickly across large parts of the geography sometimes is required. So now I'm in Wisconsin, and I will be staying here for a few days. But it all seems like a blur, the trip from the Central California Valley, the Oregon coast, and all these different places. And, you know, when I was preparing for this podcast, I wrote a few things down. And even that stuff got out of order, because obviously Mount Shasta is south of the Oregon coast, and Lassen National Park is south of Mount Shasta, but I had all that reversed and confused because of the rate of travel. The velocity of travel was pretty rapid, and I had some amazing experiences. Some of these places, the national parks are so crowded you can't stay, and some of them at this point in the year, so this would have been a week or so ago from the time of the posting of this podcast. You know, it was early June, early to mid-June. Now it's clearly mid to later June. And some of those parks weren't fully open yet. Lassen is a volcano that blew up in something like 1914. And there are still active hot springs and things like that in there. And there's still snow up on the peaks, something like 8,000 feet. So then I just kept going up the Oregon coast. And I was going to go to Seattle and hang out with a friend's, one of my son's friends. We raised our kids together, these two families, my son and these two boys, Everett and Jim, and then their sister. So they met on the stairs of the apartment building we lived in, fast friends from the time they were about 8. And they're still great guys. And it's interesting, you take these guys that we used to take to hockey and so forth at 8 or 9 years old, and now they're men, you know, they have jobs and they have responsibilities and their marriages and things like that. So Jim and I, Jim's the older kid who is now obviously a man, we were like, I said, you know, I really don't want to drive into Seattle. It's just, I don't know if you've been to Seattle lately. But driving something like this in Seattle gets to be really stressful for me. And if it was a car, it'd be one thing. But this vehicle being what it is, I really got to watch what I'm doing, and it gets to be too much. So we decided to meet at Mount Rainier. Now, I mentioned Lassen, I think it's Lassen National Park. I can't forget Mount Shasta, the town of Mount Shasta, one of those little places. We talked about Taos. Mount Shasta as a town at the foot of Mount Shasta in Northern California, in the central part of the state, is spectacular. Great town. And of course, that whole area coming up then out of that up into the Oregon coast. And then once I got up into Oregon, I did this incredible off-road adventure on the Rogue River in the Siskiyou National Forest now. So I decided to go across to the coast through the Rogue River National Forest. And I have a map. I use maps. I don't use Google. I use maps. And the map showed a state forest road cutting up through the Siskiyou Rogue River National Forest. About 30 to 40 miles of it, at least, is dirt and gravel. And it was quite an adventure. And there was a couple of things, and actually some things I wanted to do podcasts about. One of them was that I was really starting to be like, I've got to find a place to camp. I can't be driving around in this forest completely lost. And, or at least I wasn't lost, but you had to really pay attention. And I wanted to stay on the main road because I knew eventually that was going to lead to the coast, you know, highway 101. And I could almost do a whole podcast about the experience. I ran into a woman with her kids and she decided she wanted to follow me. I said, this is eventually going to turn into blacktop. When it does, then we can figure out. And it did. And so she was like, at one point she asked me, she was following me and they rolled up and said, do you know where you're going? Well, all they had was Google. And of course there was no signal backup in there. And Google did not even know that those roads existed. And this is the thing about the whole off-road into these giant national forests. You got to be careful. Now, eventually I made it to 101. They had to go the other direction. The next day she texted me Facebook messaged me and said, I hope you made it. We got back. They were going the other direction because they live in Oregon. I was going to the coastal road. But I said to God, to the universe, whoever, I need a campsite that's deserted, hopefully, but at least a marked campsite where I can just put in for the evening. And came around a bend, about another 10 minutes, and there it was. So that was pretty cool. And the next day, it took me yet another 4 or 5 hours to get out of there, got onto the coastal roads, and just had a great experience with the whole Oregon thing. And this is after being in the desert where it's 110 degrees. It was like 60, 65 up through the Oregon coast. And then that's when I got on the horn with Jim and said, let's just meet somewhere. What's a good place? And we came up with Mount Rainier. So at this point, I'm heading up the Oregon coast, Coos Bay, Florence, Lincoln City, Seaside, Astoria, and then, of course, to Mount Rainier. Now, the Mount Rainier story is real simple. And that is, it was really cold and wet. We had a good time. I had to camp for 2 days to wait for Jim to get there. So I went to a national forest and it was sunny one day, raining the next, got up to Mount Rainier and it was pouring down rain and it was cold. And I made some decisions about what I'm going to do the rest of the summer. And we'll talk about that shortly. Well, it is great to have Nathan Nelson at Virtus Law with me in this travel effort here on the Bob Davis Podcast. You guys know that I have two lawyers that I advertise. Both of them are great. Nathan, of course, and Tim LaCroix, the real estate attorney. And I love you guys, and it's great to be able to advertise legal services. Let me tell you about Virtus Law. They have offices around Minnesota and Texas. But the thing about Virtus Law, and in particular, Nathan W. Nelson, is strategic thinking. So I'm talking to people who have small businesses. And especially, think about this, businesses that are maybe virtual or nomad businesses, you need legal representation. And if you're from Minnesota, you need a lawyer who thinks three steps ahead, who thinks strategically. A lot of lawyers, they do what you ask them to do. They don't think strategically. Nathan W. Nelson specializes in strategic help for small businesses because you have to be on top of things. And I have some examples, and he often gives examples. Obviously, you got to be on top of the COVID situation and regulations. There are things like management service agreements, which is where you get all of your internet stuff. Succession is a huge thing for family-owned businesses, especially today. Estate planning, partnerships, asset protection, debt issues, income tax planning, you know, family businesses. All these things require strategic planning. And for that, you need Nathan W. Nelson at Virtus Law, V-I-R-T-U-S. It's a strategic thing, you know. Let's be honest. Again, most lawyers don't give you strategic advice. They do whatever you want to do most of the time. But if you're the owner of a growing business, you got to have more on the ball. You want to look at long-term planning and not short-term transactions, as Nathan would say it. And that is what Nathan W. Nelson, one of the co-founders at Virtus Law, does. Full legal services, strategic planners, fees structured reasonably, which is what I love about him. Call Nathan W. Nelson at 612-888-1000, 612-888-1000. Check him out online at virtuslaw.com, V-I-R-T-U-S, or you can click on the Virtus Law banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. it wouldn't be a Bob Davis podcast these days without mentioning my guys at 36 Lynn, the independently owned and operated community-focused refueling station at 36th and Lindale Avenue in the Lynn Lake neighborhood. Why? Well, you know, one thing is affordable gas and fuels because they are independent. They get a better deal on those fuels. They can pass the savings on to you, which is why they're so busy. The other thing is the store. They have great locally sourced products. They have great coffee, and they're tons of fun. So for more info and great 36 Lynn community events, check them out online at 36lynn.com or click on their banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. So yeah, I was going to say that once I got out of Rainier, the idea was to go across 12. That turned in essentially, or the option became to go on to 24 and then on to 26 in Washington State. You may not know this because I didn't. A lot of the wheat in this country is grown in Washington State and these wheat fields. So you have to understand, I don't even think video would do it justice. You can't take a picture that does this justice, this incredible broad, first you're in a desert, and that kind of gives way to these rolling fields of green, which right now, because it's early in the summer, are green. They will eventually be golden, and this is where all the wheat is. But we're talking about agriculture on a vast scale, much more vast than you would see even in Iowa or southwestern Minnesota or Wisconsin, because of the size of these ranches and fields where they're growing all this wheat. And I'm sorry if this is a mispronunciation, but we're talking pretty much Palouse County, which apparently is the largest wheat producing county in the United States. And that is saying something, because when you stop and think about it, it's all Western Washington, parts of Montana, and then of course, a great deal of North and South Dakota. They grow wheat, especially North Dakota. So it's saying something when you say that a county in Washington State is the largest wheat producer. But these fields were green, bright green, and it was really spectacular. Again, driving across and seeing the level of agriculture. And there's two observations, one about Oregon and the other one about this level of agriculture that we see across this country. I often think, if I wanted to start a business, what would I do? And it's, you know, you think, oh, what would I do? Because our orientation is urban or suburban. And yet the largest, probably the largest business, and it isn't, I know it isn't the largest business by volume in terms of the country, in terms of our output or anything else. And I know that agriculture is, but I think geographically, agriculture, as we know, farming is everywhere. And it's on a vast scale. It's pretty amazing. From logging in the Oregon area, the coastal areas. And it was funny because people were saying to me, well, what about this lumber shortage? And I said, I don't think there's going to be a lumber shortage for long, because it was one logging truck after another. And these sawmills and production facilities for the lumber were operating constantly. And it was pretty interesting to see that. I came 12 across Idaho, the Bitter Roots and the Clearwater National Forest that is just beautiful, on into Montana, which is amazing. And I now know why so many rich Californians have moved to Montana, because it is absolutely stunning, especially western Montana. I saw that forest fire that had just started when I was coming through there, that later became much larger. But Montana, wow, even eastern Montana, which if you go on the train, kind of seems like North Dakota, is beautiful. And I'm not talking about the mountain part, but when you come down out of the mountains and then head on into North Dakota, Montana, it's kind of, they kind of mix, just in terms of the visual look of the land up in that area. So from Montana, this whole trip across Montana, staying in national forests and so forth, on into North Dakota and the grasslands, where I also stayed. And most of these national forests, there was no way to pay or they were free. Same with BLM land. Nice campsite sometimes for free. You hear all this stuff about how you can camp for free in these places, and I didn't really understand it. So just inside the border in North Dakota, there's a thing called the National Grassland. And I went up in there, and I couldn't figure out where the campsites were. So I looked it up, And basically, you just pull off the road and you camp. And that's what I did. And I did not realize until I was making dinner and I looked out the window and there were cows all around the vehicle. And I thought, boy, I hope there's no bulls in this group. Opened up the door, and the cows were just as surprised to see me as I was to see them. It was an open range, so there were cows everywhere. And it was funny because later I kept the door open and they all left and lit cow pies all over the place. And I looked out the window and here's this one cow kind of just leaning over and looking into Mobile Podcast Command, very curious about the what I was doing in this place. And later on, she was up on the hill kind of looking down. It's very interesting. You know, animals are interesting to me because they are... they live in a world that is obviously very rich in all sorts of experiences for them. They're not human beings, but they are curious too, and they relate to you too. And when you're in their world, you're on their kind of, you're operating on their rules. So it's kind of interesting to see that. I wouldn't say that they don't have fear, but one of the fleeting images that I have in my mind's eye of this trip was coming around a bend in Oregon on that hot forest road and seeing it was a very large black bear hauling ass down the hill. And it had been, so I came around the corner and there was one of these earth graders, their road graders that they just leave out there so they can go and get into these difficult areas and grate the roads when they need to. And it looked to me like the bear was kind of checking out the road grader, and when it heard me coming, it turned and ran, and it was just this beautiful, very large, sleek black bear, shiny, and running at about 25 miles an hour to get away from me, and I thought that was fascinating. So I've seen some amazing things on this trip, and then from North Dakota, I came across North Dakota, but then I dipped down because I had to go to Sioux Falls. And I think I was on 12. I'm pretty sure that 12 comes all the way out through Montana and then dips down from North Dakota into South Dakota. And the roads are really... I got to say, the roads in South Dakota are pretty, pretty great. And again, this entire trip was all on back roads, including, obviously, across the National Forest to the Coastal Highway in Oregon. But all the way across Washington and Montana, these were U.S. highways or state highways, no interstates. And some of them are obviously separated two-lane highways, but for the most part, they were two-lane, you know, roads, and just amazing. And if you I spent a couple days in Sioux Falls because we had meetings, but if you consider the whole trip from Mount Rainier to Sioux Falls, we're talking about 4 days for all that mileage. And again, when you travel that fast, it's like watching, it's like binge watching a TV series. You know, I did see a bunch of places that I really want to go back to. And I think it's kind of interesting. This whole process is, I like to talk about the internal processes for this. I don't know what everyone else's nomad experience is. The only way that I know about nomad experience is the beginning of having conversations with people and what they're doing. And some of those are RV conversations. Obviously, you heard the conversation with Dave Keel, who is doing it without a car, and he's doing this 7,000-mile trek at 71 years old. I also ran into people with various levels of RVs. And of course, when you're in a park where there's lots of RVs, people want to talk about your truck and you want to talk about your truck and you want to talk about their truck. And so I run into a lot of people who are retired or close to retirement and they've got these big RVs. And they're also doing a nomad thing, but they're doing it where they go to RV parks and places that can accommodate one of these big bus level RVs. Or a fifth wheel but with a dually pickup and everything else. And there's lots of complex conversations about motors and engines and what's required and hookups. And I find that fascinating. But I also, every now and then, encounter people who are kind of like me, driving some kind of vehicle in various states of repair and various ages, converted school buses, vans, and so forth. And then there's the people on Instagram who have the fabulous pictures are doing that. And so I don't know what how you travel, if you're listening and you're a nomad. I don't know how you travel and what your rate of travel is. My suspicion is a lot of people, you know, try to get jobs or they try to hang out in one place for very long. If I stay someplace for more than a week, I start to get really antsy because I want to go. I made it to Wisconsin for Father's Day. I've been here for a couple days now. We're having a great time, and I'm really glad I did. But there are some conclusions. First of all, there is the layering of experiences. You know, one of the things that one of the decisions I made when I decided to sell everything and move into the truck and be a nomad was I wanted to get this experience of the whole country. And now what's really interesting is I am seeing the country and seeing a very large portion of the country in these moments, these unique moments in this early summer of 2021, as we tentatively emerge from COVID restrictions, and you can feel a sense of optimism or relief. You can feel the changes that have occurred that are probably permanent as the result of this COVID thing. One is that people don't want to go into an office anymore. So there's far more people out and about, and I don't know whether they're not working or they're saying, okay, I'm going to take a break and go to the Walmart. I think that's very interesting to see these changes as we emerge from COVID. When I first started in October, you would drive through towns and they would be like ghost towns, almost deserted. You would go to the Walmart and it would be almost deserted. And now things are starting to get very busy. Again, most of the time on two-lane roads across this country, once you get out of any kind of city center, even if it's a small town, 25,000 or so, you are usually the only vehicle on the highway. And that is not the case on the interstates. And this is why I don't understand why people travel on the interstate. But if you're doing that, please keep doing it, because it is a pleasure to drive when there's nobody else on the highway. And I am usually the only vehicle on the highway for, you know, miles, at least going in one direction, whether I'm out in the desert on Route 66 or running up the coast, a 101 to Oregon between, I don't know, Coos Bay and Lincoln City, or any of these other places. And it's great to see the country as we both have. There have been changes due to COVID that are unseen. They are basically software-based changes. And yet there's also this general feeling people are finally breathing. They're going out to the beach and they're breathing. They are going out again to take pictures of the whales. I pulled into one stopover place and there were, you know, people with cameras taking pictures of the whales. Or people traveling this summer with their families. And again, the national parks are packed, but I have to tell you that if you don't go to the top 10 national parks that are in the Rand McNally Atlas, then, you know, you're going to be good to go, because you can get into the national forest. People can't believe that I've been camping in these campgrounds in the national forests and there's nobody there. This has happened on a couple of occasions. I've gotten campsites like at the Grand Canyon, which really surprised me. That really didn't, you know, surprised that I was able to even get a campsite at the Grand Canyon, but I did right after the park opened. So, and then finally, I want to talk about the weather and inflation. So you hear lots of talk about inflation and what's this mean for the traveler and the nomad. Certainly things like houses are more expensive, RVs are more expensive, right? But what's interesting is that you hear all this talk about, oh, well, now it's going to be inflation. We're going to have all this expensive whatever. So, yes, diesel fuel is expensive in California. It's $4.39. It's $4.29. But I found that once I got out of California, got into Montana and Idaho and North Dakota, price of gasoline and the price of diesel fuel, which is my bailiwick, diesel 2, 309, 311, 314, which is less than what I was paying when I started out. So I was paying 323, 334 back in October on the highway at the truck stops for diesel 2. And now I see it's a little bit less than what it was when I started. So this idea that there's all kinds of inflation on fuels, it depends on what state you're in. And I think it's really important to point out that it is state taxes on fuel most of the time that drives the price up, and it makes it look like it's the oil companies or it's the economic situation. Now, there may indeed be inflation. I'm not going to get into a whole discussion about economics, but I'm not seeing much of it when it comes to fuel, unless I'm in a state like California where they really tax the fuel. The other thing is, I am loving the heat. I love the heat wave in the desert. It was 107 in North Dakota. In North Dakota, when I rolled through just last week, and here I am in Wisconsin where it's 55 degrees today, 60 degrees today, and alternately sunny and raining. And yet, 3 weeks ago, it was 100 degrees here. So I am either bringing cold weather with me or I don't know what. Some decisions that I've made. One is I want to go back out west. And the second thing, and really the final, is that I want to work on trying to filter some of this travel for some productive adventures and destinations, as some of these places that were closed are going to be opening or reopening. And I'm thinking about yoga ashrams or something to that effect. I don't want to just drive through places on my way to somewhere else. I want to spend some time in places, and some of it's random, and that's okay. But I think I'm unique. I think I'm a little bit unique in terms of the nomad experience because I move pretty quickly between these state borders. And I could do podcasts about how different all these states are, the things that you see that you connect up in your mind in terms of history and how the Industrial Revolution changed the country, and how the technology revolution is changing the country, and how COVID is changing the country, and how World War II changed the country. And when you travel that fast, I have these crazy synapse connections and obviously draw conclusions, some of which are probably incorrect, but some of which are general enough that they aren't. And I get nervous about, you know, sharing them because I don't want to be like, oh, that guy's crazy. But at the same time, it's an incredible learning experience, and I have this sensation that this is a layering in. And what's unique about what I'm doing is that I am moving relatively fast, even when I'm not moving that fast. Because I think most people that are doing the nomad thing are moving from place to place where they hang out for long periods of time. And I'm not doing that. I am moving, and I'm moving all across the country constantly. So what's the overall effect? Of people say, and this has been the latest, longest, most asked question of me, has been, how long do you plan on doing this? Because again, it's the same thing of, are you okay? It starts with, we're all worried about you, are you okay? And then once you dispatch that, I don't get that as much as I used to. But now it's, how long do you intend to keep doing this? And the answer is, I've only barely scratched the surface. I feel like despite all the travel that I've had, I put, 25,000 miles on this aged truck. It had 179 some when I started out. It's now got 192, so I put close to 20,000 miles on it. And it's very interesting that I only feel that I've scratched the surface in terms of the places I've been and the things I've seen and the conclusions I've drawn. And each time I roll through a certain area, like this time I skipped the coast from LA up through San Francisco, because to be quite honest with you, I've done that 5 times. I don't need to do that again. Some of these other places, these experiences layer in, and it gives you, and I'm struggling to find the words for it, but it gives you this real broad sense of this whole country and how it's connected, and yet how it's not, and how it's the same, but it's different, and how we couldn't have done this 25 years ago, even 30 years ago, would have been more difficult to do. In the 70s, it would have been almost impossible. In the 50s, it really, you would have been stuck on one or two roads. I don't know how my grandfather, who was a traveling salesman back in the 30s, did it. I don't know how the gangsters, the guys who actually started this whole thing, John Dillinger and Bonnie and Clyde and so forth, must have had a rough time, but they only were out for a year or two at a time. You know, Bonnie and Clyde in particular, John Dillinger was just going from St. Paul to Chicago, let's say. So I guess the other troubadours would have been the early country and rock artists who traveled by bus. Loretta Lynn and B.B. King, who traveled by bus pretty much his whole life, 365 days a year on the road. You get this view, this long view, that is so great. There's a tremendous amount of gravitas in that experience of the country. Even if you're on freeways and you do it, as long as someone like B.B. King did, or Loretta Lynn or Waylon or any of those guys, or the rock shows, the rock artists that travel by bus. It is really fascinating. And I don't think I'm going to end this mission anytime soon. Also great to have Cartridge World on the adventure, because they are getting me great deals on print cartridges, so I do not hate my printer. Cartridge World is serving the universe from Maple Grove, Minnesota, 30% compared to the big box stores off of the price of those print cartridges. Free delivery and qualifying orders, and you can call them at 763-420-6632. That's 763-420-6632, or click on the Cartridge World banner at the top of the page, thebobdavispodcast.com. Why pay more to print? Got to quickly mention the people that help animals who need us. Dogs and cats in particular, inspireandflourish.org helps all these agencies that help these animals because they need all kinds of stuff. If you want more info, check them out online at inspireandflourish.org or visit the inspireandflourish.org banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Once again, shout out to Mark Corin and the guys at Alpha Systems. They'll be at EAA this year. If you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, it's all about the angle of attack indicator, because the bottom line is most of the accidents in civil aviation are caused by angle of attack issues. The Alpha Systems angle of attack indicator solves that problem. Click on their banner for more information at thebobdavispodcast.com. In this podcast, I just wanted to give you guys a little extra oomph in terms of the experience and the places I've been and the speed. I hope I gave you a sense of the scope of the movement over the time. And this is unusual. This 4-day trip is unusual. So from here, I have to think about where I'm going to go next. But the thing is, I can go wherever I want. And that is the real true sense of freedom that being a nomad actually brings. So thanks for listening to podcast 1002, the Bob Davis Podcasts.
Poop. Father, let us build a boat and sail away. There's nothing for you here. And brother, let us throw our lot out upon the sea. It's been done before. I'm thinking about a broken heart. I'm talking about the break of dawn. You love me while I'm here, then you can miss me when I'm gone. Sweet misunderstanding, won't you leave a poor boy alone? I'm the one-eyed seed of a tumbleweed in the belly of a rolling stone. Back on the highway, yeah, yeah, yeah. Back on the road again. I had a little woman in Memphis. She wanted to be my bride. She said, settle on down, travel in man, you can stay right.